This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 207 in the series. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. At the Franklin Mass School Committee meeting held on February 11, 2020, Technology Director Tim Raposa presented a detailed overview of how his department supports and enables all of Franklin's technology needs, both town and school side of the business. Of all the updates on technology that I have seen over my years of reporting, this is the most comprehensive and easily the most up-to-date, as it contains all the current numbers. When you stop to think about it, the town of Franklin is really a service organization. Yes, it is a government entity with town and school separation on some items, but one of the key collaboration points is technology. The town exists to provide services to its residents, education, fire protection, police and other emergency response, roads maintained and plowed, recreation, library, senior services. The list is extensive. These services are delivered all or in part with technology. How is it done? Let's listen to Tim explain. The recording includes the Q&A with the school committee and runs approximately 62 minutes. School committee chair Ann Bergen introduces the agenda item. Superintendent Sarah Ahern provides a more detailed intro and overview while Tim sets up his laptop. Links to the Town of Franklin technology page and to the presentation document are included in the show notes, so you can follow along.
So now we're going to...
We have another presentation this evening. Tim Raposa, the Director of Technology, who is works for the school department as well as the town, has some background information for you related to technology matters. And he is going to make his way up to the front. I think we'll probably have to log in order to get to the station.
Possible.
But we wanted to provide you with a little bit of background information related to technology early on in your kind of tenure as school committee members. We had the capital plan before you, which included some requests for technology replenishment. The school committee has toured buildings lately and has seen some of the infrastructure that supports the entire system. I think primarily we think about it in terms of teaching and learning, but there is a lot of technology behind the scenes keeping things running, including things like our phones. And Tim coordinates it all for both the schools and the town. There's a lot of investment in there. So he's going to share a little bit more about it with you.
All right, thank you very much. Again, my name is Tim Raposa, for those of you I haven't met yet, Director of Technology for the Franklin Town and Schools. I've been working for Franklin, a little bit about me, I've been working for Franklin for about 14 years now. Prior to that, I was the technology systems engineer over in Foxborough Public Schools for 5 years. And before that, I was in private industry for roughly 10 years before. I come from the more technical side of things in private industry, and I've learned a lot about education, the education side, all on the job training by having excellent mentors that you can see to my right over here. And all throughout my history in public schools, I've really had the benefit of being mentored by some really excellent people. So that's a little bit about me. I'm going to just talk a little bit about our technology infrastructure, what the technology department does, and the different components that we oversee. Take a little break about two-thirds of the way through, ask some questions, and then we'll wrap it up. So, Franklin Technology Services. The department, as we said, is a merged department. Town and schools are covered by the 13 employees of the Franklin Technology Department. These are the different positions we have in the department and the rough split. These aren't etched in stone, of course. They vary from year to year, month to month. But that's basically the percentage used between the town and school. And those abbreviations, you can probably figure out what those are, like HS, high school, JK, JFK, different schools, different locations, both town and school. I'm going to go through each of these support areas, just a brief description about each one, starting with what we do, end user support. And we'll highlight each one of these to keep everybody on track. Roughly 1,000 staff in town and school, roughly 70%, 30% laptop, desktop. Approximately 5,300 students, as we know, 3,000 students at the high school, middle school levels, they all use Chromebooks daily on a one-to-one basis. And the elementary schools are almost one-to-one with Chromebooks, but not quite there yet. And we have ticketing systems so that folks can just enter in tag numbers, and that's how we track our requests, our repair requests, service requests. Device support. What do we support? This is just a rough breakdown of the components that throughout the district. I can read through those. You can read those all by yourself. However, there are a lot of things behind the scenes that aren't on this list. So this is our end user type support, where you know someone's using their laptop, desktop. This doesn't work. They're doing presentations. Run over there, fix it. Give them a replacement device, so on and so forth. But there's a whole host of devices that also sit in closets that no one sees, that all of these devices connect to. And last week we had the opportunity to show a little bit of that to some of the school committee members, and it was nice to see the expression on their faces when they went into the closet and said, "What is all this?" But we'll get a little bit of that later. Software support. So. We roughly 2,000 pieces of software, and those are transitioning more and more to software as a service, which basically just means online programs like we all run today, right? Gmail, so software as a service, referred to as SaaS. are all of these software that is located, you know, installed on disks, on hard drives, slowly being replaced, moved to the cloud, as we like to use that term. However, database integrity consistency must also be maintained across all of these systems. Whenever inter-application communication is required, which basically means when Munis has to talk to Aspen or to another database that we're using, we also coordinate those connections and build the bridges between the software. Network support. I'm going to spend a little bit of time on the network because it is so critical, and it's that thing that is behind the scenes that so many people take for granted. And to define in its broadest term, what is the network? It's the foundation for the communications of pretty much everything. Everything we do is attached to the network. Just last year, we added one more critical thing to the network, which was our telephones. Before that, the telephones weren't on the network. We just changed to VoIP systems, voice over IP, which now means the network is responsible for our phones. And not only did we put the phones on the network, the internal network, for a cost-saving measure, we moved from what's called PRI to SIP trunking, which, so when you place a phone call, it goes out, obviously, into the phone system network. There are two paths to get there. One is a PRI, which you pay for, which is a dedicated line, and the other one is SIP trunking, which uses your existing internet lines. Well, obviously, if you're going to use your existing internet lines, that price goes way down by a factor of tens of thousands of dollars of what you were paying for those other VoIP PRIs. With that cost savings comes more responsibility to make sure that network is up and running, because if the network goes down now, you lose your phones. So this year in capital, for example, we just got approved, the capital, but we're purchasing backup switches to keep on site so that if a core switch goes down, it can be replaced on site and our phones will be back up in roughly an hour, because we have to configure it and put it up and get it powered up and that. So again, a critical piece that we had to have put in place, but that critical piece was $25,000 just for those two switches. But we need it now because we're depending on that network, on that foundation. What is the network? Hardware, local area network, thousands of drops, everything that's the hole in the wall is an endpoint to the network. The other end of that hole in the wall is connected to a switch, and they are all across the net, all across the district and the town in closets. Again, you don't see them. Access points, 647 of these access points that you see in all of our buildings across the town and schools. The different types of connections we have between these devices are the local area network, which is the LAN, which is basically connecting things within the building, the wide area network, which is connecting the buildings to each other. And now we have fiber that we're responsible for that is strung across the poles all throughout town at 22 separate locations. This private fiber that we had installed about 8 years ago connects our buildings together at a very high data rate. And of course, internet access. All of our network connected building to building, room to room, all has to somehow get out to the world, out to the internet. And that is our internet access. We have three redundant connections, one at the town, two at town hall, one which is dedicated to town, one which is dedicated to failover, and one at the high school. If any one of those three go down, they fail over to the other. So we keep our internet up with our 99.9% reliability. What's on the network? Well, everything's on the network. everything. Every person here right now has a phone in the pocket that's probably on the network. Every laptop you're on is on the network. Every phone, every security camera, every access point. There are probably 50 things in this room alone that are on the network. Desktops, laptops, tablets, point of sale, our lunch, right? Ring up something for lunch. Our security cameras, 350 roughly security cameras at the high school alone, all on the network. Building environmental controls, something that people don't think about. It's why Mr. D'Angelo, when it's an exceptionally cold weekend, can, from his house, turn up the heat in a single room in a single building anywhere in town. Why? All of the environmental controls are put on the network. Access control, beep, open a door, that's on the network. We already went over security cameras, building environmental controls. Our media broadcast systems at the high school. Interactive displays, our telephone systems, we already went over that. Our desk telephones, distant learning through Skype. And of course, all our internet services, frequently referred to as cloud applications. SAS, Google Suite, Google Classroom, so on and so forth. So the network is, if you haven't gotten it yet, the most critical part of technology in the technology department. It's what we focus on the most. Next on the list, what we focus on are the servers. It's another thing that sits back there in the closet that people just take for granted. And what do we need servers for if we have this connection to the internet with our cloud services? It's for authentication. So if I want to make sure you can get here, there, and not there or there, I need servers to authenticate who you are, find out where you're going, and control that access. I want you to get to this printer, but I don't want you to get to that printer. I want you to be able to go through that doorway, but not that doorway. And we do that a lot at the high school with our access control. We also use it to host our software applications. The most critical software application that we still have in-house that hasn't been put out in the cloud is our Munis financial package. It runs the whole town. Any new software we get is almost 100% guaranteed going to be run from out in the cloud. It's just the way everyone does it now. No one was really selling software that you install on a server anymore. But with the exception of Munis, and a few other software programs like NutriKids, our lunch software, that still get run in-house, pretty much everything is run outside. But Munis is a pretty important program, as is NutriKids. NutriKids, I believe we are going to be transitioning that probably within the next year to maybe something that is in the cloud. So again, we will be relying on that network more so than we are the service. In short, again, they are the management platform. So we have our network that connects everything, and we have our servers that manages everything that's going on, including how we get out to the internet. this person needs to get to Facebook, but we don't want everybody getting onto Facebook. That's the servers. That's authenticating those people. Who can get onto what parts of the Wi-Fi? That's the server that manages that. Who gets on the network is the servers. So they are very, very critical, a very critical piece. And the reason that I'm stressing that is because I know that I just asked for a lot of money to replace our server infrastructure, and I want to stress that it's not only the network, it's the network and the servers. They really do work in conjunction to provide the services that we all take for granted and we use every day. Cloud services. Big question is, why don't we just use the cloud? Well, we do use the cloud. And here's just a quick list of some of the cloud apps that we are using. And it's no small list. I mean, Google Suite, everything's Google. Google Classroom, the Aerohive management for the access points. Aspen, viewpoint permitting system on the town side. TeachPoint evaluation system. All of our website hosting, obviously, and our regroup mass notification system. All those phone calls you get at 5:30 in the morning saying there's no school. Security. Oh, we have all of these things connected to the internet. Anything that is connected to the internet can be hacked. If it's your toaster or your microwave that you connect to the internet, it can be hacked. It doesn't matter what it is. So it makes our job very, very challenging. How do we approach it? Internet security, there are three different areas where security comes into play. First one is your edge security, your firewalls. How do you keep people out that aren't supposed to be coming in? That's pretty basic. That's pretty well grounded. Your LAN security. How do you segregate the network into different pieces so that should a breach happen in one, it doesn't affect the rest of the network? That's what you call LAN security, right? The local area network. And of course, your client security. I get a virus on my computer. I don't want it to spread. You have to have software running on your computer to capture that virus and stop it. And that would be our Sophos antivirus. Sophos Intercept X, which is specific to ransomware protection, and secure access on our end devices. Basically, we keep the privileges of our end devices high enough where people can do their jobs, but low enough where they can't install software. This protects the local device so that it can't do malicious acts. All of this is configuration, and again, this is where the servers come into play. Chromebook security. So Chromebooks aren't laptops, they are cloud devices, so they connect pretty much directly to the internet. But we do have ways of managing them through Google's Google Admin, through Securely software, which is a free service that works great, that allows us to do some management on our one-to-one Chromebooks that do go home. Physical security, obviously we have locked doors where our technology is, for the most part, where the really critical stuff is anyway. it's tough to have everything secured. But the stuff that's in the places that may have some open doors with some storage areas in there, it's pretty much just network switches. There's nothing critical that can be hacked in there. And of course, Wi-Fi security. So all those access points everywhere, you have to make sure that you're only allowing people on the network who belong there. Disaster recovery. What happens when something breaks? Well, we back up our data about every half hour. Things are getting replicated between town and schools. If the town system should shut down and break or get hacked, we can turn it off, and within probably, I would say, 1 to 3 hours, bring the town operations up on the school nodes, and vice versa. It's not an easy thing to do. We may run into some glitches along the way that make that 3 hours 7 hours, but we can bring it up, and we have duplicate systems. With the new replacement systems that I'm going to be putting in with the Capitol, that time will be cut down to an hour. We'll be able to fail over and bring it up. A big reason that it takes much longer to do it at the present time because the systems we're on are 6 years old, going on 7. And it takes, they have evolved into running, initially it was going to be 47 servers when we purchased them, they're running over 100 servers now. So all of that takes time to move and transition to the new mirrored system. Cloud, we already talked about that. That is backed up using Google Vault. And our email archive is also accomplished by using Google Vault on both town and school side. School, of course, is free. Thank you, Google. And as long as it's free, you know, we will be reaping quite a bit of that, because just to give you an idea, on the town side, it's over $50 per user per year on the town side. Imagine if we had to pay that for every student and every teacher and every employee on the school side. It's some scary math. Security enhancement. MIIA, our insurance company, does include some coverage specific to ransomware attacks, which is my biggest fear, is a ransomware attack, and I'm doing everything I can to try and mitigate anything that may come through. We do have a disaster recovery and ransomware response plan that we discuss with my network admin, my server admin, and my junior network server admin. They all know the pieces of the puzzle, and there's some redundancy built in there and some overlap as well, just in case one person should find another job. And our end user cyber responsibility training utilizing the Know Before platform. Know Before is, you can look it up, just Google it, Know Before, spell that fancy way, K-N-O-W-B-E with the number 4. And what they do is it's a platform that continuously and randomly and uniquely sends fake phishing emails to all of the employees. And if they click it, I know. And they also receive training. It's a fantastic training platform where they get 15-minute videos or a 5-minute video or sometimes a 45-minute video to watch to learn how to be more vigilant. Because as I was just discussing this morning at our COA team meeting, we can do 80% with our firewall and with our antivirus and our anti-ransomware software and our LAN segmenting, and we can do everything that we can do with hardware and software to try and protect our users, filtering. But the last line of defense is that user. And if a user clicks on something that they shouldn't click on, they are literally opening the door and allowing the bad guys in. So them, the users, being able to see and recognize these false phishing emails, it's very, very critical to the overall success of both the town and the schools, because they are linked. That training is very, very important. It's a critical piece of the puzzle. Facility support. Now, the reason I broke facilities out specifically, we do support every school and town department. Any meeting that a town or school is having because they want to do something new and different, I'm usually there, because we're usually buying software to drive efficiencies, changing process to drive efficiencies, and it's usually a technology solution. But the facilities department in particular uses a lot of technology, and we do a lot of technology support with them for the areas listed here. Again, access control, door fobs, the telephone system, the security camera system, environmental controls, the lighting controls, and all of the software that is used to support all of these devices. So Mr. D'Angelo and I are very, very close friends. We make sure that we keep in touch, and we are always conversing about how to do this better, how to do that better, how to make this work, how to get this to work the best way. State reporting. Another area that the technology department is responsible for. We have one full-time person, Jen, our state reporting specialist, and she is, Jen Turner, she is responsible for all of these state reports every year, and that is the list. In addition, she also does, and there is some downtime occasionally between them, those reporting deadlines, and she's, does some data analysts as well. You've seen some of the things come through at earlier meetings that the superintendent has presented. But again, I just wanted to reiterate that the state reporting requirement is pretty substantial for a school district. It's one of my one employee, well, I have one part-time employee as well, but it's my one full-time employee that is 100% school, because it's all about the state reporting, keeping that data accurate. And finally, the evaluation and purchase of all technology hardware. Again, before any technology in the town or schools is purchased, I'm in on that meeting. We have to make sure that it is compatible with our systems, and that from a technical standpoint, that it is the right solution for the task at hand. Gives me the opportunity to really get a good insight into pretty much every department, and after 14 years, I have a pretty good idea of how every department is running, and what they do and what their needs are. So, once the technology is purchased, we have to coordinate the installation, the implementation, and sometimes end user training for major implementations like Viewpoint on the town side, Munis on the town side. Those implementations are run by the technology department. They're getting a lot easier though with the onset of cloud-based applications. Purchasing falls into two main areas. Annual licensing, which is basically the bulk of my budget, and hardware and repair or replacement, addition, repair, replacement. So usually we add hardware with our capital. We replace computers, that sort of thing. Or maybe get some cool new stuff if there's some money available. Like maybe some smart boards, interactive touch boards, that sort of thing. But again, the bulk of my budget really goes to that licensing. The downside of having all the stuff in the cloud is you pay for that monthly fee. You pay that monthly fee, you pay that annual fee, or they just turn you off. If you have stuff installed on a server, well, you may still have access to it after you're done paying your licensing fee, but you just may not have support, but you still have access to the software. It's one of the reasons we keep Munis on the inside. Alrighty, so we're at that pause. We're taking any questions about this list of topics. I know I've been going on for a little while now, so. Any questions?
Questions, Tim?
Well, first, thank you for everything you do. I know we're not even all the way through, and it's like, wow, like there's so much, and just knowing how fast technology changes just to kind of keep up with all the different components and the complexities associated with all those aspects is no small task. So definitely appreciate you just kind of like knowing all of this. The question I had is kind of related to the a little bit of a disconnect I think that I had with a stat that you raised and then something that I heard when we were doing our school tours. During the school tours, I was asking some of the people that were giving the tours kind of what were the biggest pain points that students were communicating or educators were communicating up to the administration, and one of the things that kind of came up for both students and administrators was related to the technology reliability and the Wi-Fi and just kind of systems going down. And I know you had mentioned like 99.9% reliability, so I'm just trying to understand where the disconnect there is. Like it was multiple people that were saying, the network goes down. And I even noticed in the high school you had, or somebody had, like, take a picture for Wi-Fi issues were like posted all over the place. So I don't know if that's because there are issues or not, but I'm just your thoughts on kind of that comment that came up from different people.
Yep, so we did start the year with a very bumpy road in the Wi-Fi access point, the Wi-Fi access points, particularly at the high school. Sorry, this is a little bit of a lengthy story, so I'll try to be as brief as I can. So our access points at the high school, those little white access points, it's what connects your computer to the network, to the LAN, not to the internet, just to the LAN from here to there. It's pretty much the equivalent of a network cable. over the summer, our vendor, Aerohive, that sold us these access points 6 years ago at the high school now, right? They recommended that we move to the next version of their management software. Unfortunately, that management software was not designed to run their six-year-old access points. So when, after converting the entire district over to this new management platform, which took us a good portion of the summer to do, because it's one by one test, when the school year started, the problems that happened with the access points started to crop up, and they only happened when they got hundreds of connections on them. Took us a while to realize what was going on. We're feverishly trying to mitigate those little issues of, you know, connectivity. What you saw, Tim, was something that we've had at the high school for years, was that if you have a problem with the Wi-Fi, go to wifi.franklinps.net, and a little form comes up and allows you to real quickly, and I know everyone's going to ask, well, if the Wi-Fi's down, how can I get to the form? Well, you can go to a wired computer, or you can use your phone or some other method than your Chromebook or what might happen to be down. Let us know, and what that does is it alerts four people, well, actually six people in our department via email as soon as you click submit, and logs your issue. At that point in time, because Wi-Fi issues are so difficult to troubleshoot, we have the person in the high school or whatever other school is there go to that location and talk to the person and find out exactly what it is. Is it really a Wi-Fi access point? Is it something on the desktop, the laptop, the device, the Chromebook? So very, very difficult to troubleshoot and very difficult to get a handle on. Once we realized what it was, and it took us until mid-December to roll all of those access points back to the old management system again, those Wi-Fi issues started to dissipate. And I have records to show that. After that, of course, because, you know, things, you know, problems don't just happen one at a time, we started having a little problem with our firewall. A very difficult problem to find with our firewall as well. Unfortunately, tech support, we would do exactly what they would say. We would send them the logs, they would look at it, they'd say, okay, try this. Okay. Wait a week, be okay, and then it would start dropping again. Okay, tech support tried this. So that process iterated for about a month or so. But the end user sees this problem starting in September, and it's the same problem. It really wasn't. It was a combination of two problems that kind of overlapped. We've been pretty steady, for the last month or so. I did do an interview with some students at the high school to try and explain the issues, get the word out. Again, I reiterate, if there are Wi-Fi problems, make sure that you send, you get that notification to us so that we can address it. I'd say in the last 2 weeks, I've gotten two Wi-Fi reports. Both times they were addressed and had nothing to do with the Wi-Fi. It was just an end user problem on their device. So I think we've definitely turned the corner. We have made a lot of changes to the firewall and found a lot of things that may have been configured wrong. Basically, what was happening, the firewall was getting flooded internally for a lot of different reasons we don't need to go into. And the CPU processing of the firewall was hitting its max. And when it hits its max, it drops everybody and starts over. And it's about a 3-minute reset cycle. But when you're in a classroom, I understand a 3-minute reset cycle seems like 10 minutes. And everything's down and I can't do anything. I understand. And it takes a while for everybody to connect back up as well. So those were the problems. Really hoping that our problems are behind us, and we should have a very uneventful rest of the school year. So, but thank you for answering that question. Give me an opportunity to address it.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other questions?
I'll go. So, was there a cost associated with that upgrade and then rollback?
No, it was there. It's kind of funny. It's called Aerohive Hive Manager because these are Aerohive access points, and the next one was named Aerohive Hive Manager NG for next generation. Apparently the NG stood for something else because it was no good. And, and we had to roll it all back to the old classic Hive Manager. Problem had to do with the firmware because it was 6-7-year-old firmware in those devices.
Yeah.
They didn't upgrade the firmware inside the access point. So when the management console came up, it needed a later version of the firmware which is compatible with it, but when we put the later version of the firmware into the access point, it would cause the access point to have the problems. So that's why it took so long, because what we had to do is individually send the old firmware back into each access point, reboot it, and test it.
So beyond manpower.
It's just manpower. It's time.
So and my other question is, now looking at your evaluation of all technology, and the point number two was once deemed compatible, right? So that was like your second point of your flow chart.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question then comes, did that purchase and upgrade kind of go through this evaluation of technology?
Oh yeah, 6 years ago in 2014?
No, the upgrade piece, where we ran into the problems.
Oh, we were just going back to where it was. We were going back to what we were using for 6 years. So we didn't have to reevaluate it. We were putting it back to where it was before it broke. So it was running fine up until, so this summer,
mm-hmm.
Aerohive said, okay, upgrade to this new version. So we said, okay, we're gonna upgrade to this new version. We actually started back before the end of the school year, I think in Davis there, and we did a couple of floors, and we tested it.
Mm-hmm.
We said, okay, seems to be working. Of course, after MCAS was done. It seems to be working okay. Tested it, monitored it, and then would put it in another couple of locations towards the end of the school year. You have to remember, the end of the school year is light usage. So we thought we were okay. We had tested it, done our due diligence. When the school year came on and the high school came back, and we had upgraded all of the schools because our testing went okay, it was the amount of users that came on that caused the problem to crop up. Like I said, kind of technical to explain. It had to do with.
I got it.
Okay, it would basically make you connect and then it would drop you.
Okay.
So.
I have a couple more questions. Don't be
like, yeah, you finish.
Okay. So my other question was the technology specialist, who's 100% schools.
Mm-hmm.
So she does all the reporting.
Reporting specialist.
Is
yeah.
that a new position?
No, we've had that position for, I'd say, I don't know, 9 years. Seven, 8 years? Yeah.
Okay, so that's what she's done the whole time?
She's new to the
position.
Well,
she's new. She hasn't been here for
so long. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so then my other question is,
three or four people in that position.
Is there a check and balance process for submitting that data, or is it she's the sole responsibility? Does that go through you, or no?
Oh, yes. Actually, that is all defined by DESE. So DESE says, okay, so these are all the things that you have to do, and it's validated, and then once they get to the point, they're submitted to... Some of them are submitted to the school's principals and to Sarah, and she goes through all of the data, and then she validates the data. And only the superintendent, once all is said and done, can go into the DESE portal and say, yes, it's correct. So there is a lot of checks and balances that are to take it.
And then the only other thing, which you're not going to know offhand, interactive whiteboard breakdown, so I would be interested to see the allocation of those across schools.
Interactive whiteboard allocation or
yes,
the breakdown?
Where they are. The breakdown of where the 414
comes. Oh, when you say breakdown, I thought you meant like malfunction breakdown.
No.
Oh, okay.
That's your job. You fix them.
Access, believe it or not, interactive whiteboards, pretty much every single classroom. We have interactive whiteboards of some sort. They're not all the same kind. Some are the old smart boards.
Yes.
Some are interactive projectors that the projector itself is interactive. And at the high school, those are all interactive projectors as well. With Eno boards. So pretty much every classroom. And it's why we're so dependent upon them, because they are everywhere. And it is part of that replacement cost cycle that we're struggling with, because a lot of them are 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
The newest ones are 6 years old.
And I wasn't sure if I heard you talk about upgrades to the system. Did you mention a network grant? Infrastructure upgrade or no?
A what?
A network grant.
Yes, so we went for a grant, community compact grant, and we did not get it.
Okay.
It was for $180,000. Unfortunately, we did not qualify for it. I guess it's more of an as needs.
Okay.
So the town came up with their half of $90,000, and we're still looking for the other half. But I've had some discussions with the town administrator, Jamie Helen, and if it's not too snowy of a winter, we might at least be able to get some of that.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I just had a quick question. have been looking at one of our goals at the school committee. We're sort of looking at care and well-being of all staff, you know, and when you look at the enormity and the complexity of all of the work maintaining the infrastructure and all that's done, and you look at the tech support technicians, I was just curious in terms of are there enough of those to support this? Are they getting overwhelmed by the work? Is it something that we need to pay attention to down the line in terms of, because we know we just want to make sure that we know that with the shortage of positions all around, people are getting recruited away and all of that. Curious to see if what you feel about the number of tech support technicians to support the enormity of this. I was just curious from your perspective of that.
It's kind of on my next slide. On my next slide, I do talk about one of my critical areas is staff retention. I just wanted to take a break here because there's so much information here. I didn't want to get lost.
Good, I was yep. Looking at that number. I didn't, you know, go ahead. Very good.
Do we have any more questions on this piece here?
I think we're all set with that. No.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so moving on. Ongoing challenges. You can see number two is staff retention. But number one is, of course, security in capital letters, because every week we hear of someplace getting hacked, personal records going away, things being encrypted, and people not being able to use their computer for weeks. That would be completely disastrous here. So that is my number one priority is security. Staff retention, sustainability of technology infrastructure, and technology integration and training. I'm going to go through all those just briefly. Security challenges, right? Always top concern. It's always been a challenge balancing security with functionality. So right now we're tightening up a lot of our camera access, for example. We kind of noticed that maybe too many people had access to our cameras, because when they were put in, they were still maybe in development stages where we had given access to people to troubleshoot and test, and we noticed there were too many. So right now we're pulling back some of that access and making sure that we know who has access to cameras. It's very important when you have a bunch of kids roaming around classrooms and hallways. So as we pull that back, we get some people saying, hey, how come I can't get to my cameras anymore? Oh, all right, well, maybe we overstepped that. Maybe you need that. And then we have to go through the channels to make sure that person is supposed to be on those cameras. So that's the balance, and that's everywhere. I want to be able to install a software on my computer. Well, sorry, you're not allowed to install software, but I need to install software, but you can't, because if we let you, we've given you too much privilege, and you can get nasty things on your computer. Ransomware, the biggest threat to all cities and towns. Bitcoin, I've talked to our treasurer to open a Bitcoin account, and she has looked into that, and she's spoken to our banks to make sure that we are prepared to, should we need to pay a ransomware, if it made sense to pay a ransomware, that we are prepared to. No one wants to pay a ransomware, and the advice is to never pay a ransomware, but it's always a decision that has to be made, and has to be made within a few days, whether or not, and that decision isn't mine alone. It never is. It is an organization's decision. Not saying that we ever would want to pay a Bitcoin ransomware, but it is a decision that has to be made, and you can't do it without having a Bitcoin account set up, because it takes too long to set up. but that is just a preparatory measure. And of course, user training that I've mentioned before, the Know Before platform, that it's critical that all of our users get trained and know how to recognize those ransomware emails, because they're getting trickier and trickier and trickier. And if they click on the wrong thing, they hurt everyone. It's not just like, oh, technology, come and fix this for me. No, you just took out the whole district. You just took out the whole school district and town. So they really, really, I can't make people paranoid enough about this. They should be diligent. Staff retention, to Ms. Bergen's question. Yes, the economy is good. Yes, technology professionals are very tough to find these days. Fortunately, I have a really good staff, and they enjoy working here in Franklin. When I interview people, I tell them right out of the gate, we cannot compete on a financial standpoint, and we never will. But we can compete on a lifestyle standpoint. You get to go home at 4 most days. You very rarely have to come in on a weekend. If you want the lifestyle and you can afford to work here, it's a great place to work. If you're looking for money, we're not the place for you because we cannot compete with private industry. And we all know that. Anyone who works for me, including myself, can go somewhere else and make more money. We're here because we want to be here, and it's great to have a staff that is working because they want to be here. It changes the whole game. So I'm very grateful for that. And my staff, I haven't had turnover in a couple of years. So I haven't had anyone leave in a couple of years. So I'm hoping they're happy, and I'll do whatever I can to keep them happy. So. But yeah, it is a big concern for us. Sustainability of the technology infrastructure. That's another big one. As you all saw in the capital requests, current funding model does not support replacement life cycle of our network and all related hardware that I so went through that lengthy list a little earlier. What determines our hardware life expectancy? Well, there are three, really, right? There's, when you say, well, what is, and I know Tim, you had this question, so I chose to define a little bit more for you on this and the next slide. Say, well, what makes something unusable? Really falls into three areas. The usability life. Google is just getting eaten up too much memory, so my little laptop with 2 gig of RAM on it is just slowing down. Fine. Support life. All right, well, I can keep on replacing components on that laptop, but there's going to be a point in time where it's costing more to maintain it than it is to just replace it. Kind of like a car, right? Same thing. Car gets about 10 years old, and you got to maybe start thinking about replacing it. And manufacturer end of life. This is one that's very commonly overlooked. So network switches, access points, all of these things, you pay a support contract every year, and they will give you instant replacement, lifetime guarantees. They're not talking about your lifetime. They're talking about the device's lifetime. And who defines the device's lifetime? They do. So when they say this switch is now end of life, what it means is if it breaks, we're not supporting it anymore. So you better upgrade your switches. If that acts, same with the access points, same with a lot of the devices that we have. It's at that point where we have no choice but to upgrade. We have to replace these devices because when they break, it's game over. So those are the three life expectancy points. I just took a real quick summary of, this isn't all the devices, but you can see laptops you replace in roughly 4 or 5 years, desktops 5 to 6. We can stretch those a little. Chromebooks, 6 years is really a light side on that because we have Chromebooks that are now 6+ years that we are still using. The life of those is really determined by Google. They will no longer support them after, license them after a certain number of years, but that keeps changing, so stay tuned. Classroom projectors are really running into issue right now. After about 10 years, we repair our own projectors in-house. We literally pull them apart, replace ballasts, replace the bulbs. We do that in-house because it's way cheaper than sending them out. It's minimum $300 just to send a projector out. We can get a ballast for roughly $110, $120 and replace it ourselves. We just recently ran into, I've got 50, 60 projectors that are in the 10-year range, and we've been buying ballasts, and we just bought the last 35 ballasts that exist in the world, all right? All of them, we got all of them because, and once we're out of those ballasts and they do pop, that's it, we can't use those projectors anymore. So we're playing it right to the edge. They're just not available anymore. Virtual server environment, which is the network infrastructure that I'm changing over right now. 6 years, we're going into our six and a half year. We need to replace it. That isn't just not supported anymore, and we can't have that critical piece not supported. Access points, network switches, informational displays all throughout the high school, for example, TVs. Our large projectors at the high school. People don't realize we have 4 projectors at the high school, just 4 of them. One is in the cafeteria, one is in the lecture hall, one is in the auditorium, and the other is in the gymnasium. Those 4 projectors represent over $250,000 in costs. Just those devices. That's a lot of money for having those 4 devices. They were $60,000 a piece to purchase plus installation. Just the device was $60,000. So think about that. Those are very expensive devices that we have and we have to maintain. Not to mention all the audio equipment that's in the back in the closets and the corners that have to be turned on to make these things run. MediaCast system, another extremely expensive device system that was purchased at the high school when we built it. Behind each display is a little box, and it's a little computer. And all of those little boxes and the rack that is the device, that's that cost when we first bought it with the high school, $400,000 for that system. To display media, it does a lot more than just, you know, make pretty pictures. It's a literal production environment where they can make professional videos that can go out to the students and can actually be streamed online. And occasionally we do that. And our voice lift systems, which is another thing that is behind the scenes that people don't realize we have. The microphones in every classroom that can amplify, just as in this room here. But we have those all over the district. We have voice lift systems. And it's just more hardware that needs to be maintained and eventually replaced. So again, my concern is we do not have in our regular budget the ability to replace these things in a timely manner or by the time that they expire. And we do it with capital, which, as you know, capital varies from year to year. So one of my biggest concerns. And last but certainly not least is technology integration and training. One of the places that we lack in Franklin, in the teaching side, in the teaching area, is support for our teachers to learn technology and to integrate technology into the classroom. As Ms. Keenan had said, technology is moving so fast that, yeah, that it's my job to keep up, but that's all I'm doing. I'm focusing on technology and staying ahead of that curve to keep us all going in the background. But teachers are teaching classes all day. They can't keep ahead of the curve of technology, and they need that support. You know, their kids can get ahead of them even more quickly than they can keep up. And, you know, through no fault of their own at all, it's just that technology, again, is moving quickly, and they need the support. Most districts our size will have five to six technology integration specialists. We have one, Mr. Dan Chase, back of the room. It's a big area where we need to fill some holes. Or we have run the risk, and have been running this risk for quite a while, of buying all this nice, neat, new technology, and it's not really getting used to its fullest potential. We're not getting the bang for our buck. So, just something to think about. And that is my conclusion. I hope I covered everything that I could, and hope it was comprehensive and interesting, and I'm ready for any more questions.
Just a quick comment. Does the STAR team still operate at the high school?
Yep, I just went to a Panther help desk meeting. They prefer a Panther help desk.
That's
I prefer
right.
A STAR team, but went to a Panther help desk meeting just yesterday, yep, and they are still very active, asking for internships over the summer, so we'll see how many of those we can get and help us out during the summer, replacing all those Chromebooks.
Could you maybe describe that a little bit for committee members who may not have been aware of the STAR team?
So the STAR team stands for Student Technology Assistance and Resource, maybe? I forgot what the R stands for.
Residence.
Nope. Forgot. Shame on me. But anyway, they're my stars. Anyway, they're all our stars at the high school. And basically, they run a desk right in the library, Media Center, has technology over it. And when students have issues with their Chromebooks, or a teacher has an issue with their laptop, they can stop by and get some help and maybe a little bit of training. They have a display up on the wall that they can put things up there. 90% of it is taking in a Chromebook, doing some repairs on the Chromebook, and getting it back in circulation as quickly as possible. They will do some classroom work as well, to go into the classrooms, try and, you know, fix some things, you know, got a projector down, whatever. And they work very closely with Julie Bland, our part-time inventory person for our Chromebooks over at the high school. And the two techs, Bill Gaffey and Ian Connell over at the high school. They kind of take direction from them, but they do have a, what do they call them, coach, I guess? What do they call for when they have like a...
mentor?
A mentor, yeah, like a lead teacher. That's Pam Dishberger over at the high school, a business teacher over at the high school. She leads the Panther Help Desk. As I said, in the summertime, we can typically find a couple of dollars to have a couple of interns work for us during the summer. And most of that is refurbing all of the Chromebooks that and all across all of the schools, roughly 6,000 Chromebooks all across the schools. Imaging teacher computers, getting those ready for the first day of school. As you know, we have all the ins and outs, right? About 30 new teachers a year, and we have to take all those Chromebooks, get them ready for new teachers, all that sort of thing, getting the technology ready. Summer's a very, very busy time for technology. We're doing a lot. And at the same time, we're following the custodians around as they wax the floors because we can't get in the buildings. So it's very, very hectic, but you know, because I have a staff that's been here a little while, they've kind of got it down, so they know the game. Any other questions?
Just a question about like the projector. Do you see trends in, because I've seen this at Fidelity where I work a little bit, where conference rooms are, they used to all have projectors, and now there's kind of this trend towards like a lot of flat panels instead of the projectors. Is that something that we see in schools more and more now, or?
Absolutely, as the projectors are starting to go away, the price of flat panels is coming down. I mean drastically.
Yeah.
Literally, maybe a fifth of the cost they were 6 years ago. We have 10 of those at the high school. Outrageously expensive in 2014, and I mean outrageously expensive. But we wanted to have them in those project rooms and in the library. Those were like the first iteration of those. They were 80-inch displays, touch panel displays. They were the whiz-bang, greatest, coolest technology. That same device today, you can get for a fifth the cost, so prices have dropped dramatically. You can get smaller ones for even less, but they're still not to the cost of a projector. And one of the things we're actually running into now is they are interactive and they are touchscreen, and that's a new technology. And you just can't just learn that. You know, you need that integration specialist to go and show you how to, you don't just want to do the same thing that you did in books and papers and pencils on a screen, right? You just don't want to do the same thing. You want to leverage the new capabilities of that device. And it's that piece, that's where you need that integration specialist to research the new ways of capturing students that are in front of a screen 90% of the day anyway. So if you're going to take them from this and give them pencil and paper, they're going to fall asleep, right? So that's really what we're dealing with. So if we can get a little bit of excitement with that interactive display, that's where we need to go. Yes. Sorry, I'm getting off topic, but in answer to your question, we do have three of these over at ECDC, 55-inch interactive touchscreen displays, and we're working through that, getting them to really sync at that location. Before I purchase more of them, we need to solve that problem of how are we going to best utilize them. If not, a projector can project just as well as a TV screen can project a YouTube video, if that's all they're really being used for. And that's how I look at technology, right? You want to invest your money, but you want to make sure you get your money's worth.
Did you have a public comment?
Come on.
Just once again, identify yourself.
Yes, Steve Sherlock, Franklin, 10 Large Drive. Excellent insights, thank you. You probably have, and don't have to have it right now, but to the extent that we today can't afford to replace capital-wise the technology that we need and depend up to run both schools, et cetera, what would be the ballpark of an annual amount the town does well in terms of putting stabilization money aside for fire trucks and field replacements, if they haven't already considered something from the technology perspective? That's critical but, you know, again, you don't have to answer it now, but some number, whether it's one, two, something in the millions perhaps, it may be a sticker shock, but that number would be good to have, and probably as we're going into the budget cycle should be raised for discussion. But thanks for all you do.
I do have that number.
I'm sure you do.
And that has been discussed. So just as a question, that a stabilization for technology has been discussed for the last couple of years, and we are very interested in putting that together so that we can get a handle on this. It won't solve it year one, probably year two, year three, year four, but it's a 5-year lookout plan where if we can put this together, a stabilization plan, the same way that we do to purchase a $1 million fire truck, it'll put us on a much better footing. So we are absolutely looking at that.
So I think the technology integration specialist piece is so important because, like you're saying, if you're buying all these fancy things and people are just using them to play a YouTube video or a TED Talk or something, that you could just do that on an old TV, right? So how does that look? How can you have one person across a district this big help that many teachers?
Well, the shorter answer is you can't. We have one person at the high school.
Okay.
Dan is at the high school. He does do some work at the other schools when asked to do so, very graciously. His job description is the high school. And they're desperately needed. I can't understate that at all. We are far behind other districts in that area. As I said, you know, District SI should have 5 or 6 of these people almost as their own sub-department. Working with teachers, making sure that they know how to use these devices.
Can I jump in for 1 second?
Sure.
We do have 2 other structures that are an attempt to provide some additional support to teachers, but don't do the work of full-time integration specialists. One is we do have some technology coordinators, that might not be the right title, but
digital learning coordinators.
Stipended, yeah. Teachers at each school who do take on some additional responsibility for some staff training, and they may lead something with their building principal during faculty meetings. But they have it's not a full-time position. This is on top of their full-time teacher position.
Yeah.
And then we have a digital learning committee that Lucas leads, Joyce before him, that is working to create some resources to make available to teachers. So that is our attempt to provide some support to our staff, but it is not quite the same.
One of the things I was going to add to that when I asked my question was, you've put it as a critical need in the last few budget cycles, Sarah. That has been something you've raised and we've had to let it go in order to just maintain level services, and because you highlighted it as a critical need for the last few years in the budget cycle, but we haven't been able to. That's one of the things we haven't been able to do. So it's just one of those things as we keep in mind the importance of, that's a good point, because it has been listed as a critical need overall. But on behalf of the entire committee, just thank you, Tim. It's a thorough presentation, and it's important because we've made a promise also to be as open and transparent with the community about the budget and the needs. And I think sometimes people don't realize the enormity and the complexity of the infrastructure support. I know it's just so eye-opening to see that, you know, what it is, and for the community to see how schools have changed dramatically, and what the costs associated with supporting education today is so different, and the more we educate people about it. So thank you for the thoroughness of this. It was a lot of work, so thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you all.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is entitled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.